Welcome back to New Rock Stars. Marvel's Eternals leaves us with many questions. Chief among them, spoiler warning, is there a cleanup service for giant dead baby celestials who poke holes back through the ozone layer? What does it mean for the MCU now that Earth is essentially a botched emergence on display? Woo. And why might Tiamat have wanted to die? This is the question we'll be talking about this week on Inside Marvel. It's our weekly deep dive into the biggest Marvel news and updates and questions you're curious about. I'm Eric Voss, here with, as always, MT.
Eric, there's a baby inside the planet, and you almost got out, Eric. Did you see that?
Yeah, I noticed that. I felt like the tidal wave that would have resulted from that drowned me living in a coastal area. I thought that was a bit weird.
When I drowned to death.
And the Earth's crust basically dematerialized. You know when Earth got knocked off its gravity by having a giant dead robot baby hand poke through the stratosphere?
I mean, it's just, you know, it's a little bit more weight than usual. It's just fine. Totally fine.
Hey, I love this. I mean, that wide shot that is now like in trailers that Marvel is releasing because they love this shot so much.
It's so cool. It looks amazing.
It was so cool. What? Well, in the days leading up to Eternals, I teased that this movie would be, quote, groundbreaking, redefine what world building means, changing the face of the MCU, end with a giant celestial hatching through the planet. Oh, maybe I should have said that. But had terms like that not been such cinema cliches, they would have been spoilers, because now the Earth in the MCU is just basically left with the corpse of a celestial Tiamat jutting out of the Indian Ocean. So, does this doom the planet in infinite other ways? And did Tiamat want this to happen to him? I'm going to make some interesting arguments that I want to hear your thoughts on, MT.
Okay.
But there is a brand new Latest Obsession shirt inspired by Eternals that you can get at newrockstarsmerch.com. It's called the Immortal Unity shirt, and it has this super cool Art Deco design. And this is a limited edition shirt, so you got to grab one quick before it runs out. They also have a second Eternals-inspired design at the shop with a Celestials look to it. You can only get these shirts and other great original designs inspired by Loki, Shang-Chi, The Mandalorian, and other properties you love at newrockstarsmerch.com. But MT, what's our big question this week?
Well, Eric, can't get a bigger question than this. What is going on with Tiamat's big-ass, giant f-ass corpse at the end of Eternals? What just happened, and what happens for the future of MCU Earth? Like, what happens now?
Could not have worded it better myself, MT. I think that's what everyone was asking as they walked out of the movie. Because one of the big twists in Eternals, of course, is that Earth was actually, all this time, a gestation pod for a celestial seed of the dreaming celestial Tiamat, who feeds off the life force of intelligent life on the planet. This comes from the Eternals Volume 4 series in 2008, in which it is revealed that Tiamat has been sleeping underneath the surface of the Earth and rises up from under nearby San Francisco and just kind of stands there in Marin County as everyone driving down Lombard Street is like, What's going on?
Is that a giant man? Oh my god.
Tiamat, to his credit, decides against destroying Earth because he grew fond of humanity and wants to just to be judged by its own standards. Ain't that nice? But you could also see some parallels to more recent comics in 2018 where Loki reveals that another celestial named the Progenitor came to Earth to die and has been decaying underground for 4 billion years, his bodily fluids leaking into the soil and really being the cause of Earth's superhuman abilities springing up. Loki actually calls him Father of the Avengers, and his corpse lay resting at the bottom of the Arctic Ocean near the North Pole, and other celestials coming to claim the corpse actually give it to the Avengers to serve as their new headquarters.
Cool. I hope so.
Well, in this movie's final act, Cersei figures out how to boost her transfiguration abilities to transform Tiamat's golden body into white marble, seeming to kill the celestial based on the light in his eyes flickering out. And then she and Makari deduce that Tiamat must have linked with their uni mind in order to allow this to happen. So it could be that Tiamat, as in the 2008 comics, was really fond of the Earth Eternals and of humanity and didn't want his birth to lead to their destruction, which is a pretty profound sentiment from a newborn and implies says that he must have been sentient and having some kind of empathy long before the emergence to have his mind made up to make this decision. So I wonder what would have changed Tiamat's mind from the basic instinct of self-preservation and going along with Arishem's plan to this self-sacrifice for the greater good of basically the specks on his eggshell. Well, I think it is possible that Tiamat would have been inspired by the self-sacrifice of Avengers like Iron Man, Vision, Black Widow, etc. Seeing Tony Stark kill himself to take out Thanos and allow Earth's population to surge back, tragically, unknowingly giving Tiamat enough energy to hatch, might have broken Tiamat's heart and made him think that what Ajak concluded, essentially, that these humans are different, that they have evolved to a level of cosmic wisdom that makes them worthy of preserving for the good of the universe. Do you think this could have been why Tiamat made that decision? What do you think was running through Tiamat's mind as he was dying, MT?
I like how you say Tiamat's mind, because I think that this is where the answer lies. It lies within us as beings, because we learned in Eternals that, you know, basically Tiamat is the energy, the mind and life force energy, essentially, of human beings. It's all of us. And so because Tiamat is the dreaming celestial in the comics, I have this weird feeling that this entire time, all of our lives have been Tiamat's dream. And like, we are all, you know, part of his life. Like, we are Tiamat. So like, if Tiamat were to emerge from the planet, we would all instantly become part of Tiamat. Like, we are Tiamat. Like, that's like, he's sort of like, we are Groot. It's like, we are Tiamat, like, himself. And so he decided, he didn't, like, die. He decided to stay. He decided to go back to sleep so that we could, so he could continue dreaming through our lives, is what I'm thinking.
Wow, MT, you just blew my mind. This is why I love talking about Marvel stuff with you, because you got the right mind for this kind of thing.
I'm crazy here. Just
reminded me how in eighth grade, I think I tweeted about this recently, our eighth grade, I went to Catholic school. So weirdly in Catholic school, you one of your classes that you get graded on is religion, your level of theological
understanding. I went to Bible school from grade 5 to 12, so you're talking to the right guy.
Yeah, it's, and it's kind of a weird setup when you think about it, because all these little kids who are trying to figure out how the world works just asks this like teacher who is like has lots of different skill sets and is also trying to teach us like math and algebra and like English composition, basic theology and spirituality and metaphysics. So at some point our teacher blew our minds and freaked us all out and said, you know, we're like, well, what if we have friends who aren't baptized Christian or like, you know, who had never had a chance to be baptized, or we have family members who are of a different religion, or we marry someone of a different religion, does that mean when we go to heaven, we're not going to see them? And our teacher says, you know what, she was from Chicago. She's like, you know, you don't have to worry about that. when you become part of God, we're all just going to be so in love with God, and we're going to become part of God, and you're just not going to care about anything else. And we're all like, what? And everyone just had panic attacks in our little tiny awkward desks. And we're like, And what you described is essentially that same idea of like, once we die, our entire existence souls get transmuted into this larger form that has been basically feeding off of our life force and become part of something greater and get recycled into the new order of the universe. I mean, what Arishem said was terrifying, but it's kind of beautiful in a way.
Yeah, man. Like, if that was all, that's essentially all Eternals was about. It's about the redistribution of energy. And that's what the Celestials were doing when they're, you know, seeding these planets. So it just makes sense to me that, like, we are Tiamat's dream. And he just wanted to keep, he just wanted to go back to sleep. And that's what he did.
But I think ultimately Tiamat made a choice there, though, that defied what Arishem wanted. You know, I think Arishem wanted Tiamat basically to move on and join the pantheon of other Celestials and building new sections of the multiverse and the universe or whatever. But Tiamat's like, no, I still want to stay part of this. Like, his loyalty shifted. Mm-hmm. So something about, like, humanity and about the Eternals made Tiamat want to stay nestled and connected to the physical parts of the planet.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it all boils down to human beings as a species. I think, like, there's something about us, like, maybe it's our capacity for love, it's a capacity for compassion that, you know, Tiamat sees, that he's just like, you know what, I'm not going to get this anywhere else. Like, this is unique. And so I'm going to stay here versus, you know, other planets probably aren't as, you know, cool as us. I mean, granted, yeah. These stories are written by biased human people. So obviously it's going to be like that. But yeah, it's, I think that's sort of just like when the Celestials, you know, go through the Eternals' memories in the future, in future installments, I think they're going to find out that the Eternals didn't kill him. He stopped the birth, and he's going to find, they're going to find out that through humanity's, like, you know, experiences, that they are special amongst all of life in the universe. So they're going to spare us. They're going to be like, all right, this is weird. We're going to see how this turns out. And also maybe mutants.
And I wonder what that thing will be. What is that X factor? And is it a self-sacrifice that defies Darwinian nature, right? Like, because that's kind of the big debate between Infinity War and Endgame, right? Mm. We don't trade lives. That was Captain America's big thesis statement. And then that was tested at the end of Infinity War. And then at the end, he literally goes, oh God. Like, that, to me, was kind of the thesis. And then Endgame was almost the antithesis of that, where they do trade lives in it. Tony Stark says it's okay to trade lives so long as it is our own. And that's the same choice that Black Widow makes. It's kind of like, I mean, you could boil it down to a justification for suicide. I don't think that's what they're saying here, obviously. Mm. But there is a sacrifice play to make. And I think that is fundamental to the human capacity for love, is even when it's not in your personal best interest, there is like a competing spiritual pull that tugs all of us in off of cliffs sometimes into these insane leaps of faith to reach out and put someone else in front of our own self-interest. I don't know if that is shared amongst Asgardians, because they can dive into a battle and not walk away with a scar. Do Kree have that sentiment? No, they have this insane supreme intelligence that works out algorithms for what the right move is.
Right.
Humanity, I don't know. We're pretty awful critters probably in the grand scheme of things, but there is that kind of crazy function that is universal amongst cultures on this planet. That maybe that's what Tiamat is tapping.
I think you literally nailed it right there. It's sort of an anomaly to the Celestials, who are all about, you know, observing these creatures that are fighting for survival. And like, here we are, you know, obviously we don't have it all together. We're kind of stupid, but we are working together. There is this bond that allows us to excel. And that's essentially what the Avengers are. It's a team of people coming together to do the things that, you know, they couldn't be done otherwise. And so that is what makes us special. You don't see Avengers on other planets. I mean, as of now, maybe in the future. Right.
You see the Guardians of the Galaxy, which is kind of that. But I think, like, there is an argument here that maybe this is, like, to put someone else's interest before your own, it's still Darwinian. It's still, like, reproduction-based because you're protecting your young. But I think this Eternals movie poses an interesting question. The Eternals that we see on Earth do not reproduce. Mm. They feel an affection, something that is beyond your genes just trying to replicate themselves in an offspring. That is anti-Darwinian in nature, to just care for something beyond them being connected to your bloodline and your genealogy. And I think we see that. We see, like, instincts of couples who want to adopt children. Like, we have something in our biology that when we hear a crying baby, even if it's not our own child, it scares us to our core that something must be done, you know? It's like nails on a chalkboard almost for us, because it's like, something is wrong with nature right now. Someone must do something. Maybe it's me, you know? Yeah, there's something to our DNA that Darwin doesn't even have answers for. And this movie starts to ask that question. It's one of the reasons I really like this movie.
Chloe Zhao, you did it. You killed it, girl. You killed it.
I'm not saying those answers are found in the Bible, but maybe in the new In the Beginning scroll of this movie, that could be where the answers are.
The answers are
I don't think this, there's going to be any new religions formed after the Eternals film. Maybe in some circles.
You'd be surprised. I think there's probably an Arishim church probably being formed right now on a Facebook group or something. Who knows?
We will see. But MT, we should also discuss the consequences of what the hell happens now with Tiamat's corpse. We know what happened with Jesus's corpse. A lot of religions were formed out of that, absolutely. Yes. But that final shot of Tiamat's white marble is just massive. It's almost like, I mean, make fun of me if you want, but it's like Christ on a cross-esque. Like, it's just so like, oh my God.
It kind of looks
like it's
going to
be painted
sculpted
in murals on frescoes in crazy temples of whatever new religion is formed on Earth.
For real, though. Like, it's honestly, I just feel like everyone's minds are just broken after this. Like,
yeah.
I cannot wait to see the public reaction. I want to see Scott Legg's reaction in particular, because he's going to be like, wow, that's pretty big. I wonder if I can get that big. Who knows?
Right. I mean, both times when I saw this in a theater, that shot, you could hear a pin drop. And you also could hear, like, every divorced man in his 60s in Colorado being like, there's no curve on the earth. Let's just, like, kind of break down the physics of this, because Tiamat's fingers are towering high into Earth's stratosphere. Such a shift would cause devastating shifts to our ecosystem, tectonic disturbances worldwide. Like, it's not like the crust and the mantle are made of marble as well. It would just be okay with this different material just now part of it. Like, massive tsunamis, tidal shifts would flood most coastal cities. Global temperature fluctuations for the ways marble reflects light and absorbs heat. Ooh. It's all different. That's all going to get screwed up. Potentially a shift in the planet's freaking gravity. Like, you also have to wonder how things deep in the Earth's core would have to have been displaced for Tiamat to rise up. Like, it's not like the bedrock right above him would sink, because he is now bursting through that. Like, it would have to cave in someplace else in order to give him room to rise. So, like, is there, like, a big fucking sinkhole in Australia right now? Like, I just think this leaves Earth in such a wrecked state that I just don't see how Marvel Studios doesn't reset everything with a multiverse reboot that erases this from existence in a warped reset universe. Because it just poses too many continuity problems for any other MCU story to occur without making at least a bit of reference to the giant celestial corpse ruining the environment jutting out of the Indian Ocean. It's a global phenomenon potentially greater than the blip, which you could just say it's like magic brought everyone back, and then people are awkward now because there's more people. But it's just gonna be weird if, like, in Hawkeye, if in Miss Marvel, Moon Knight, She-Hulk, Multiverse of Madness, Wakanda Forever, if people are not talking about this.
Right.
And I don't think every one of these titles is gonna want to go back to this one plot point from Eternals. Like, you could argue this is similar to Ego's celestial goo in Missouri, but, like, when he died, it kind of was implied that, like, that evaporated. Plus, it's just one small town in Missouri. Like, how often do the rest of the world think about Missouri? Nothing against Missouri. It's just one small... There was one Dairy Queen in a couple blocks that got wiped out there.
R.I.P. Dairy Queen. That was a franchise that was going on for a while. They were around in the 80s, so R.I.P. that franchise.
Now, I don't think the Avengers will end up using Tiamat's corpse as their new HQ, just because I think, yeah, that would force all future Avengers movies to set their events around this set piece and to narratively justify it, to spend lines of dialogue, spend VFX budget on it, etc., etc. So I think it's just more likely that it might invite other cosmic scavengers to come check it out. Like, you know, the way Nowhere's severed celestial head became a mining colony for the collector, Tanalir Tavan. But,
absolutely,
you know, if Tiamat is just all marble now, I don't even know if there's really any anatomical material to scavenge. It's just essentially a statue of a celestial.
Well, I mean, we don't know what it looks like underneath the planet. Like, maybe it's just the top that's marble. Like, we don't know. And, like, maybe, like,
you're right, but, like, we see its eyes flickering out. It's kind of like her ability to transfigure it seems like it goes deeper than skin deep.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi: People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level. The who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
We are
the real Brady Bros.
Brady Brothers from the TV show Brady Bunch. I'm Barry Williams.
And I'm Christopher Knight.
I played Greg. And who were you again?
I played Peter. We've decided that we're going to do a podcast around episodes of the Brady Bunch. We're going to use it as a prism to look back to our experience doing the show and why the Brady Bunch is still popular.
Have a sunshine day.
We are the real Brady Bros.
Because then he could just be like, and like break off the ice and just be like, all right, where were we? Oh, yes. Bye, Mongolia. Bye-bye, Tanzania. Oh,
Don't need this shit anymore.
South America.
I mean, I'd be happy with the debt relief, man. If Tiamat comes in and destroys the planet, that's free debt. No debt anymore. No more debt.
I guess that's true. That is one way at looking at a global catastrophe.
But no, I think that, you know, one of the biggest reasons why Tiamat is so big at the end of this movie and like why they made him this huge figure jutting out of the ocean, I think it's because the whole world needs to understand why mutants are coming. Like when the mutants come, people need to understand that who the Celestials are and like that they are not alone in the universe and that there's this huge genetic plan for them. And so I think that this is Marvel's way of getting everyone on the world on the same page eventually for like what mutants are. But
I think if it was about mutants, like we would have had some tease in this movie at the existence of mutant kind genealogically. Like this movie clearly was not at all interested with establishing mutants in the MCU.
I think like, they did that in a very subtle way with the whole Apex Predator stuff. I think that that's what they were doing with the Deviants and all that. Sort of like establishing like, all right, like the Celestials very much have like, you know, human evolution in terms of like predators and like humanity being able to defend themselves on their mind. So I think that, you know, with Tiamat doing what he did, maybe this is what triggers the mutant gene. And like the mutant gene is what is like sort of Tiamat's way of protecting the people that he loves. I don't know. I just said a lot of words.
I think that's an interesting, it's an interesting theory for sure, MT. I just don't, like it requires us to do some guesswork based off of things that are not in the movie as opposed to guesswork of things that are in the movie. And don't get me wrong, we here at New Rockstars do that all the time. And we probably will make many videos about this in the future. But I'm just saying like, it wouldn't be that hard if this movie could include a flash of something that looked like a Skrull, you know, and include like little jokes about vampires. Couldn't they include something like, and sometimes even in humanity, powers spring up in places we didn't expect, or in that whole montage of things that, you know, the way Arishem builds these worlds, at some point you just see a human that kind of looks like Apocalypse a little bit, you know, like, or somewhere in ancient Egypt or ancient Sumeria, there's just some evidence of like people discussing rumors of some other entity that existed. I just think that their goal is like, look, this Earth is going to get warped anyway after our House of M event. So let's just wreck the sandbox. Who cares?
Well, I personally hope that they just keep that there. I think we should just have that huge celestial and just make the Marvel Cinematic Universe that just wild and different than anything else.
It is crazy. I'll give you that. And if they decide to keep it there, they are bound to build a division of Disneyland and Disney World that is just Tiamat Land.
Yes.
And you have a big roller rink, as we talked about. There's a ride that takes you through Tiamat's eyes. Like, you're in Tiamat's brain and all the weird fantasies he had. Like, that is so big and crazy. We all need to be able to visit it.
That'd be so much fun. I want Tiamat finger slides. I want to be able to slide down the thumb. It'd be so funny.
Well, we're going to discuss whether Fastos' bracelets could be connected to the Ten Rings, as well as an exclusive interview with Sprite actor Liam McHugh at the end of this episode. But first, you are probably a busy person, so stop thinking about what to wear and just embrace the radically efficient Mack Weldon Daily Wear System. The Daily Wear System is a selection of clothes rooted in smart design, made with performance fabrics, and built to work together from breathable t-shirts and polos to stylish button-ups and shorts. Mack Weldon makes it easy for you to dress for work, leisure, and play, or wherever your day takes you. They have a whole series of Ace sweatshirts that fit great and look nice enough to wear to an office, if you're into that kind of thing, while also being great for wearing around town or while exercising. It's nice to have a closet full of things that all go together, and you don't have to waste time thinking about it. Those are minutes you get back to use for more fun stuff. Buy sometime this season with the Mack Weldon Daily Wear System. For 20% off your first order, visit MackWeldon.com/Marvel and enter promo code Marvel. That's MackWeldon.com/Marvel, promo code Marvel for 20% off. Mack Weldon, radically efficient wardrobing. Also, we all sometimes lose sleep binging a show, but you shouldn't lose any sleep because of a bad mattress. Well, Helix Sleep has a quiz that matches your body type and sleep preferences to the perfect mattress for you. They have soft, medium, and firm mattresses. Mattresses great for cooling you down if you sleep hot. Even a Helix Plus mattress for plus-size sleepers. I have a Helix mattress, and I love it. The quiz matched me with a medium firm mattress with lumbar support that sleeps cool. The mattress ships right to your door for free. No need to go to a mattress store. Just go to helixsleep.com/insidemarvel. Take their 2-minute sleep quiz, and they will match you to a customized mattress that will give you the best sleep of your life. They have a 10-year warranty, and you get to try it out for 100 nights risk-free. They'll even pick it up for you if you don't love it, but you will. Helix is offering up to $200 off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners at helixsleep.com/insidemarvel. All right, MT, back to Eternals. Do you think the bracelets that Phastos made could be connected in some way to the Ten Rings of Wenwu in the Shang-Chi film?
I don't think that they're in particularly connected to the Ten Rings in terms of, like, origin or anything. I think that, like, you know, they are similar in the sense that, like, they both are conduits for cosmic energy. But I think for the most part, you know, the Ten Rings are probably this, like, really, really, like, out there, super old, predates the universe, probably, artifact that has something to do with, like, these interdimensional beings, like, you know, the Dweller in Darkness. So I think, like, that, and, like, we know that in the post-credit scene that Wong is like, we've never seen this element before. This is not something that exists that we know about. So if a sorcerer is saying this, who has a knowledge of multiple dimensions, I have this feeling that it's probably not native to this universe. So I think that, you know, Phastos' stuff is probably native to here, whereas the Ten Rings are probably native to somewhere, another dimension. But what do you think?
Yeah, I think you're right, MT. I think this realistically is just an example of a production design across Marvel titles in which they didn't really compare notes. And then there are these, you know, parallel looking props that seem like they could be connected because they functionally are, you know, they at least look similar. Right. But remember, Eternals was supposed to come out before Shang-Chi, a couple months before. So I think originally this thing wasn't going to seem like that big a deal. And then Shang-Chi was going to come out and be this entirely different game changer. And we might not have asked this question had they come out in the original order. The only link I could see is because all of Phastos' tech is linked back to the Celestials. They all are kind of connected through this this tether of cosmic energy. And whatever his power is, it is like, you know, it's basically the form of this golden cosmic glow that comes from the Celestials. I guess it is possible that tangentially the Ten Rings could come from the Celestials in some way. But I think you are right. I think these rings are beaconing something from another dimension as opposed to something in this universe. I think it'd be too simple if it was just the Celestials that were being summoned by the Ten Rings. Maybe that is the case. Maybe we'll regret these words later on. I honestly hope that, like, what is summoning them is something from Battleworld or, you know, Doctor Doom. I want the fifth Avengers movie to be Secret Wars. I was hoping the Dane Whitman opening the box, the voice could have been something from beyond that was recruiting him to join the new Avengers lineup. But just because all their power scales are getting so radically different, you know, we have street level warriors. We have gods now. Mm-hmm. The only equalizer is to bring them all to Battleworld on this weird plane that is designed for them to have kind of like more equal strengths. And until we get that common destination, I think we're going to feel a little uneasy about what everyone's relative powers are. Including this question of, like, well, then how powerful are the Ten Rings, relatively speaking, to the other things we've seen? So I think as soon as they just announce, Russo brothers confirmed to direct Avengers 5 Secret Wars. All of our questions are going to be answered, and we're going to be very excited. Until then, oh, I don't think we can say that Fastos' rings are technically related to the Ten Rings, just because it was explicitly said in Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings that these things predated Fastos' invention in the modern era facing Tiamat and facing the Celestials.
But hey, there's a good chance that Fastos' technology may have gotten into the Ten Rings organization. That probably most definitely happened.
Yeah, hell yeah. That guy has a lot of regrets. A lot of blood on his hands.
Oof. Yeah, yep. You f***ed up, Fastos. Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about this, MT. Given that Salma Hayek, we just learned, actually signed a multi-picture deal with Marvel Studios, do you think Ajak or really any of the other dead Eternals might be resurrected or rebooted in some way in a future film?
Absolutely. That is what this film is teasing. And I'm so excited because I have this very huge feeling that the Shi'ar Imperial Guard of the X-Men comics, very popular alien race. The Shi'ar Imperial Guard is probably going to be all Eternals. And that little Clark Kent Easter egg that we got in Eternals is probably a nice little allusion towards a future appearance of Gladiator, the Shi'ar leader of the Imperial Guard. And Gladiator, his name is Clark, which was a play on Clark Kent in the comics. So I think that, and he has a cape and everything, so I think that we're going to see Richard Madden as a purple Gladiator man with the Shi'ar, and the Eternals are probably going to go head-to-head with these very superpowered people, and it's going to be this weird, like, Justice League versus Justice League scenario that I really hope that's going to happen. But yeah, I think that, you know, we're going to see Richard Madden again as Gladiator. We're probably going to see what happened with Minerva in Captain Marvel 1, because Minerva, as we know, is played by the same actress that plays Cersei. So I think that there's going to be a canonical reason why these two look the same. And we're going to find out that Minerva did not have any idea that she was an Eternal. And her name is Minerva, which is a, you know, Greek type of name in on Earth. So,
or I think Minerva is the Roman version of Athena.
Yes, right.
So in Roman mythology,
Those are hints right there of like, all right, we're going to learn Cersei is probably going to get those memories of Minerva when she goes to probably what we are assuming is the World's Forge. And yeah, she's probably going to learn about this whole Kree life and her past lives, maybe the Shi'ar version of her as well. But yeah, we're going to see all these people come up as aliens. Alien versions of these characters, but
I love you had a lot of great thoughts there, MT, especially this idea of I think it would be a shame if that is the last we see of Icarus in the MCU just flying into the sun. I want to see him pop out the other end of the sun,
right?
In this form that you mentioned or any other form. I think Salma Hayek as Ajak is fascinating in that she was a Prime Eternal who did remember a lot from, like she mentioned, I've followed Ereshkigal for millennia, you know, for millions of years. Actually, no, I think she said not millennia, millions of years, which, you know, that's more than 7,000. So she remembers the past worlds. And that's just something as the Prime Eternal. I think when she was killed, her consciousness might have gone back to the World's Forge, and she might be kind of this this librarian for the Celestials, this kind of narrator, this kind of disembodied supreme intelligence within the World Forge. I also like the idea that the robotic, the sexy robots of the Eternals that we've been following on Earth, I would hope that there are original versions of them that these carbon copies were based on, and maybe we get to meet Ajak, the original Ajak, you know, and the way that... Because we're still figuring out how Eros and Thanos are kind of connected to this process. But we have a family tree video coming out a little bit later today that hopefully will clear it up for you. We want to thank some more people who helped us make this episode. Guys, there's nothing sexier than confidence, and Blue Chew can help give you confidence where it counts. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable tablets and at a fraction of the cost. You can take them anytime, day or night, so you can plan ahead, be ready for whenever an opportunity arises. The process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com, consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you receive your prescription within days. And the best part, it's all done online. No visits to the doctor's office, no awkward conversations, no waiting in line at the pharmacy. Blue Chew's tablets are made in the USA and prepared and shipped direct to your door in a discreet package. So if you could benefit from some extra confidence when it's time to perform, Blue Chew can help you. And we've got a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew free when you use our promo code InsideMarvel at checkout. Just pay the $5 in shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code InsideMarvel to receive your first month free. Visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. And we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring the show. Also, we want to thank ButcherBox for sponsoring us. When it comes to meat, quality matters. And when you invest in high-quality meat from ButcherBox, the benefits go way beyond a great-tasting meal. ButcherBox sources their meat from partners with the highest standards for quality. No more searching the grocery store for 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, or wild-caught seafood, whatever. I like a nice piece of beef, and ButcherBox has great quality grass-fed steaks. Their sirloins have the distinctive flavor you get from just the really best beef. Every month, ButcherBox will ship a curated selection of high-quality meat right to your home. Each box contains between 8 to 14 pounds of meat, depending on your box type. That's enough for 24 individual meals. Customize your own box or go with one of theirs. Either way, you get exactly what you want. Skip the lines for your Thanksgiving turkey. This holiday, ButcherBox is proud to give new members a free turkey. Just go to butcherbox.com/marvel to sign up. That's butcherbox.com/marvel to receive a free turkey in your first box. Gobble, gobble. All right, MT, I feel like you're the guy to ask about this. Why can the Eternals of Titan, including Alars, Thanos, Eros, seem to be able to reproduce, but the Eternals on Earth cannot? What is the difference between the Eternals here?
No, that's a really good question. And I think that the solution here might lie in Cersei's powers of, you know, being able to transmute a deviant into a tree. And she was able to make Sprite into a normal human person that can age. So I think that, you know, whatever that power is what Alars and Sui-san, Thanos' and Eros' parents, used to, you know, sort of bypass this thing and, like, make human children, whereas, you know, they themselves may not have been human themselves. So, in the comics, this sort of happens in a different way through the use of the quantum bands, which are, you know, these little marriage-sized versions of the quantum bands that Quasar uses to get his powers. That was given to Alars and Sui-san by Kronos, Alars' father, to be able to have children. So, if I think that there's a similar or maybe a similar-ish cosmic energy at play here that is making that was able to make Thanos and Eros people, real human boys.
I mean, I think that's an interesting explanation. I think it's also just possible that, like, the way Arishem designed Sprite to already be a child, like, Arishem could have designed Alars, Sui-san, Thanos, and Eros already in place. Like, there wasn't an actual normal reproduction process that happened. They were just, like, designed this way as a preset family, the way Wanda just kind of, like, designed her nuclear family, and there was never any sex happening between her and Vision that we know about. At least not, like, you know, successful conception. Like, there might have been some naughty soaking.
Hey man, it's the best vibrator you can have is a Vision. That's what I
hear. I mean, arguably, that is mostly what he is for.
Yes. That's why Ultron made him to be the
like that episode 8 moment where she assembled all of Westview. It was really just an ad for Adam and Eve at the end of it. Who did not sponsor this episode, but we still like partnering with them.
That would be so funny.
Yeah, I think it's just one of these things that, like, things can be created already in adult form, in a family structure form, however they need to be able to trick those people and to trick the native population into going along with that. I mean, I guess the question is, were all the people who we saw on Titan in the background, were they all Eternals? I don't think so. I wonder if just the bloodline of Alars, Thanos and Eros and Sui-san were the only Eternals on that planet, and that's why Thanos and Eros were able to survive the whatever the apocalyptic conditions of Titan.
That would make a lot of sense, because, you know, if you're an Eternal person, then food shortages and all that stuff don't really apply to you. Like, you can leave. So,
I mean, yeah, I kind of want to know what's going on biologically with them. Like, they bleed, they eat food, they drink liquor, it has an effect on them. But, like, so I guess the idea is, like, they're robots, but they still, like, from under a microscope, it still looks like flesh, right? I would imagine. It's just the way they were made was not through, you know, sperm cell into an egg cell forms, you know, but 9 months later, baby comes out.
I want the MCU to release the night of conception between Alars and Sui-san so I can figure out what's going on, all right?
Yeah, you've already taken baby steps, little baby steps by showing a sex scene. There was thrusting.
I can't say that P word. The B-Hub upload, okay? Let's get the full upload.
All right, let's shift gears here. What's our final question we're going to talk about this episode, MT? All
right, so here's a good question. Why did Arishem design Sprite to be a child? Because this person is cursed to be eternally a child, and that's not cool. That's not what you do.
Yeah, that is kind of the question we've been asking. Actually, our buddy Philip Molina had a chance to sit down with Leah McHugh herself to ask this question. Let's take a look.
A lingering question for me is, what do you think the answer is to why Arishem made Sprite a child?
I mean, I don't know if Arishem really is right about everything. I mean, you sort of witnessed that when you watched the movie. The Eternals question him sometimes. And I think it's sort of up to the audience to decide whether or not, I mean, Arishem's choice was right. I think that the Eternals were meant to represent all of humanity, different, you know, countries, different people, different powers. So I think having a child in the mix is part of that. But I don't know whether or not his decision was right or wrong.
Gotcha. Well, your character definitely hates it.
Well, it's good for me because I got to play the character as a kid. Yeah. So.
Oh, okay. Good scoop from Mr. M. Nice. Yeah, fascinating to hear Leah talk about this. I think one criticism with the movie is just with the character Sprite. Nothing against Leah McHugh's performance. It's a very difficult character to play because you're basically playing a 7,000-year adult trapped in the body of a child. it's kind of asking like what Kirsten Dunst had to pull off with Interview with a Vampire. Very difficult character to pull off. But I think the way that character was written, that there might have just been a disconnect with some viewers because that is a character that, like, and I think all the actors really in the cast struggled with this a little bit, that kind of profoundness. I think Druig, Barry Keoghan, or Keoghan, I keep hearing disputing evidence. I think he is one actor in the cast who really seemed to get that kind of anger that someone would have. Kumail Nanjiani, surprisingly, really pulled off that questioning of like, wait, is it okay that we kill a god? Are we dooming corners of the universe by trying to kill a god?
Right.
You just want someone on film to ask the questions either implicitly or explicitly that you have while you're watching it. And if they can ask it half a second before you ask it, that's how you know the scene is well written, you know? Mm. If a character cries half a second before you cry, it's like they, you know, or half a second after, maybe. You want them to ask the subtext half a second before they want you to cry half a second after you've cried, I think.
Somebody's got to cry, basically.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that is it for this episode of Inside Marvel. Next week, Inside Marvel will actually shift into our weekly after show for Hawkeye.
Hey, Haley Steinfeld season is here. Hooray!
That's right. Be sure to tune in for our Hawkeye preview episode. And we want to hear from you guys. Is it what's going to be our what the if? Is it going to be like what the Hawk? We want to know. Send us your thoughts on what you want our question format to be. Also, we got some great news for folks that want to discuss some of the topics we cover on Inside Marvel, but be part of an inner community of nerds. Our new Rockstars Discord server is now open for the public. We have made some channels available for non-patrons, so you can be part of the broader community of New Rockstars fans on Discord. Of course, we would love it if you could still support us on Patreon, but if you just want to join some parts of the conversation, still be part of our Discord community, we welcome you to join it. As long as you are over 18, that is the rule there. And if you're interested to be part of this, all you got to do is just go to Discord, search for the New Rockstars Discord server. We are now findable through just the general search thing. We're so excited, and you can join our conversation there. And don't forget to check out our many great merch options at newrockstarsmerch.com. Follow me at EA Voss. Follow MT at Mastertainment. Follow New Rockstars. Subscribe to Inside Marvel wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for watching, and we will see you next week to talk about Hawkeye. Bye-bye. Bye.